I'd give for that wonderful phrase, to hear those three little words.
I suspect that although Patricia T. O'Connor enjoyed writing her books, Woe Was I and Woe Was I Junior and Words Fail Me and You Send Me and Origins of the Species, the highlight of her language day comes once a month when she visits us here on the show. So it's a pleasure to see you. I know it's a highlight for me, Pat.
Oh, it's a highlight for me, too. I don't have to write that day. I don't know about Ken Follett, but I find writing very difficult. He's written many, many more books than I have, so he must find it somewhat
easier. His books are larger, longer than yours as well.
Yes.
And have many more characters.
Yes.
Now, we have been announcing that you have word on the whole nine yards. The whole nine yards has been one of those running themes on this show. People have called in to tell us it has to do with sales. It has to do with cement, the laying of cement.
Right.
I'm trying to think
what that it's, that it's,
it can't be football because it's the whole 10 yards.
Right. Well, that one recurring theme is that it refers to a 9-yard length of fabric, either for a sari, a maharaja sash, a burial shroud, a 3-piece suit, a nun's habit, a Scottish kilt, or that maybe it's a length of a hangman's noose or a computer printout or the cubic yard capacity of a cement mixer or a garbage truck. But probably the most popular theory of all, the one that most people suggest, is that it's a reference to the length of a machine gun ammunition belt during World War II. Well, all of these suggestions have been shot down over the years, largely because of one factor. There have never been any printed references that would back those up. And I think the last time I was on the show and the subject came up, the earliest reference had been to some memo in published in the space program at NASA in the mid-60s. So we thought it came out of the space program. But then someone found a reference from 1962 in a novel where a door-to-door salesman uses it. So that made the space program less likely. But
it's all pretty recent then.
Yes, yes.
I've always thought of it as something that goes back to the early 20th century.
No, no, not really. That's why the whole business about the yard arms and everything is in the old sailing days is probably highly unlikely. But we all know what the expression means in the popular sense. It means the whole thing, the whole extent of something. But at one time, it must have had a literal meaning. And this is what so many people find tantalizing. And what word researchers like to do, this is a kind of a hobby for a lot of linguists in their off hours, I think, and other word watchers, is that they nose around and try to find earlier and earlier dates when these various expressions appeared in print. And these are like treasure hunts, these sightings. They're called antedatings when someone finds an earlier published reference. And now that a lot of old books and journals are digitized, it makes these searches much more rewarding, and there's more to report as people spot early and earlier references. But at any rate, what I have to report is that a woman named Bonnie Taylor Blake, who's a frequent contributor to the American Dialect Society mailing list, it's a mailing list of linguists and others, has ferreted out examples of the whole nine yards in articles that appeared in the 50s. And these articles, two articles she found, they both appeared in two issues of a newsletter sort of thing called Kentucky Happy Hunting Ground. And it's a publication of the Kentucky Department of Fish and Wildlife that's only recently been added to searchable databases, and that's how she was able to find it. But in July 1956, the journal ran a story about fishing derbies that were being held around the state. And in describing the prizes that would be offered, the writer concluded, "So that's the whole nine yards. The rules are simple. You'll find them in everything you need to know on the inside page of every entry blank," and so on. So,
but from that, I would assume that people who are hearing that or reading that would know the phrase,
sure,
the whole nine yards already.
Sure, he used
already.
It as though it were familiar. And believe it or not, this woman, Bonnie Taylor Blake, managed to track down the author of that 1956 article. He's still around.
Wow.
He used it again in a January 1957 issue of the same publication, in which he referred to hunters by saying, these guys go the whole nine yards, no halfway stuff for them. So she managed to track him down. His name was Ron Rohde. And of course she asked him, where did this come from? He said, well, gee, I don't know. It was common in those days. It was a normal, everyday expression. He didn't really have any insights to offer about where it came from. So all we know is that it was around a long time before the 50s. But the interesting thing here, as this mystery deepens, at least I find it interesting, is that, you know, that popular ammunition belt theory. Well, these sightings are getting closer and closer to World War II now. The reason those that ammunition belt theory was always ruled out is that we had nothing from World War II that would show that used in a literal sense. So at any rate, now that we have sightings that are inching closer and closer to back to the war, it may be that we will have a military origin for that expression. And of course, when one is discovered, I will report back.
Mm-hmm. But this also rules out some of the later developments as
yes.
possibilities, and that's important as well.
Yes, it
does. May not have anything
it
to do with ammunition
to
belts.
Do with this, yeah, it may have nothing to do with
that. I think it has to do
that.
With football teams that never make
sure.
a first down.
Sure,
They just gain the whole nine yards.
Right. But I think this whole story is sort of an interesting little glimpse into the world of word watchers and word sleuths and these people whose idea of a good time is to track down these old citations. I've done it myself. It's a lot of fun. Now that all these things are digitized, you can go back, and that's how we know for instance.
And when Google has digitized everything that ever was published, who knows what's going to happen?
Oh, my gosh. Well, one interesting thing that's been digitized, I may have mentioned this before, is all of the proceedings, all the testimony at the Old Bailey from the time it was established way, way back, you know, I don't know, 1500s, whenever. But you find examples of, you know, people being thrown in the dungeon for swiping handkerchiefs and that kind of thing. But you find interesting, that's where the first use of the word hooker was found. Someone had called someone a hooker, and she says, I walloped him because he called me a hooker. And it was in Old Bailey testimony.
Well, I always thought it was connected to the Civil War with General Hooker.
No, that's a common myth. Although he was a skirt chaser. So that there's some credence to that, you know.
Now, we had on our show recently Ben Zimmer, who was talking about a very popular phrase with kids that actually first appeared in print in a translation of Balzac.
Ah.
But it's obvious that the use has nothing to do with the people who are using it.
Uh-huh.
I have nothing to do
even
with Balzac.
Even then, even in Balzac's time, you mean it was used figuratively?
It was the first time it shows up in print in English is in a translation.
I don't know what Balzac
right now. Right. It is part of the shorthand of the internet, and I wish
yes.
I could remember the phrase.
Yes.
But it's something that just coincided. Either
oh,
it
yes.
came into "You only live once" is the phrase. It's you know, started with Balzac, and of course we've had James Bond and a whole bunch of other people making reference to it. And now kids say it regularly. I doubt that they're aware of the fact that it started. The first time it ever appeared in print in English was in a translation of one of Balzac's novels.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So,
well, same thing happened.
Language
with...
takes on a life of its own. Is
yes, there's an expression to call a spade, which actually turned out to be a mistranslation in English of something that Erasmus had translated badly into Latin from Greek. The Greek expression was something like call a kneading trough, or... and so the translation was incorrect, and that's it.
Well, we've had that problem with translations in general. There are all sorts of translations of the Bible that that get some words wrong and give a whole and they then become the living words.
Exactly. What survives is what lives. Well, that's a.
Should we take some calls?
Yes.
Our number here is 212-433-9692. And you can also leave a question or comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Please don't send anything through email because I have no access to it. But our show page is being looked at regularly, and I would be happy to pass on anything interesting that you have in mind. Again, the number 212-433-9692. Our first caller is Kyle from Montclair, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, it's Kylie. Hi.
Kylie, okay.
So here's my question. I've been getting a series of emails lately where the person signs off and says, enjoy your week-end. So they're hyphenating weekend. Mm. And I just don't know, is that specifically enjoy your Thursday, Friday and not the entire weekend? I don't know what that's about.
Well, it's hard to say. He could mean weekend and just be throwing a hyphen in there for no good reason. Or he could mean enjoy the end of the week, meaning the Friday, Thursday and Friday. So,
or it could just be a pretentious thing.
Could be. Now, the word weekend doesn't normally have a hyphen, but it may have had one at one time. A lot of compound words start out as two words, then they become hyphenated so they get closer together. Then the hyphen falls out. So I don't know. It's difficult to say.
Sometimes in the course of the writing of one book, Faulkner wrote a novel in which the first half of the book has all these hyphenated words, and the second half he has taken the hyphens out. And the explanation for it is that he was already just a little too powerful for an editor to question that sort of thing.
Oh, but he wanted it that way.
Well, nobody knows.
He
just had it in the manuscript, and I suspect he would have been happy to have made it consistent, but nobody was willing to challenge him.
Hmm.
Thank you for your call.
Thank you.
We go now to Matt. Hi, Matt. You're on the air.
Hi. By the way, I think weekend is hyphenated in French. Maybe the person was being pretentious. I don't know.
Well, the French, by the way, started calling the word vicomte, and then the French Academy outlawed it. But Godard used it as the title of one of his films anyway.
I'm glad you brought up the Ben Zimmer interview from a couple of weeks ago, because I want to cast a wagging finger of shame at you, Leonard, for, during that interview, referring to LOL as an acronym.
Oh, it's an initialism.
Correct, right. Now, I was calling about the
I don't think I've ever used the word initialist.
Well, maybe you should start using it, Leonard.
There's always an initial
There's always
time.
An initial. Oh, thank you.
Because you don't. If it was an acronym, you would pronounce it LOL.
Uh-huh.
Right, Patricia?
That's the way
well,
I pronounce it when
correct.
I first saw it. But, you know, the first time I saw P-I-L-A-T-E-S, I thought it was Pilates. So what do I know?
Anyway, I was calling about the often misused phrase hoi polloi.
Mm-hmm.
Just twice this week I've heard it misused, once on CBS News and once watching an old Three Stooges film with... Both times they were using hoi polloi to mean the upper crust, the upper classes.
The hoity-toity.
The hoity-toity elite, yes. When actually, I mean, directly translated from the Greek, it means
99%.
The many or the masses, correct?
Yeah.
It means 99%, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, it means the many.
That's right. Yeah, the 99% would be the hoi polloi. it means the common people.
Or the 47%.
Yeah.
Depending on who's counting.
The general public, the working class, the middle class, the common people, and that's pretty much the opposite of the way most people use it.
Mm-hmm.
And how did that develop, that it would come to mean, people would use it to mean the opposite of what it actually does?
I don't know. There's a long usage note in American Heritage. Many people use the word to refer to the upper crust, the exact opposite of its etymological meaning.
Right.
A small but significant portion of the dictionary's usage panel, about a quarter, accepts this usage. So some people will allow the meaning of either word. I kind of hate to see that happen.
Me too.
Because then if someone says hoi polloi, how do you know what he means?
That's right.
Is he insulting you or is he...
Well, one other point about that, I want to ask, since the hoi in hoi polloi means the in Greek, is it proper to say the hoi polloi?
Well,
or is that redundant?
That is another issue. I remember when I first started out in the newspaper business, and I won't say even the year, a long time ago, there was a rule that you shouldn't preface hoi polloi with an article because it included the article already. I think that's a little bit stiff. For example, words from Arabic that start with L or Al have the buried in them too. You don't say there goes Admiral. You say there goes the Admiral. So I think that it's passed into to common good common usage to have the article with it.
Okay,
thank you for
Patricia.
Your call.
Mm-hmm.
The dictionary also suggests that perhaps it's confusion with hoity-toity.
Yes.
Although.
Yeah. Now, I wonder why
my feeling is it's because it's Greek that makes it sound important.
Oh, you know, this says it's a reduplication of the dialectical hoit, meaning to romp, perhaps akin to the word hoiden.
Hmm.
Well, I don't know. But I can see why if you thought hoity-toity meant snooty or the upper crust, you might think hoi polloi meant the same.
We will take a break and come back with more. Your calls to 212-433-9692 or your comments to our show page at WNYC.org. My guest is Patricia T. O'Connor.
Give to hear those three little words. Man, that's such a wonderful phrase.
We are back with Patricia T. O'Connor, author of a number of books on the English language and a regular visitor to this show. Also, Pat has a blog called grammarphobia.com, which you can check into anytime. Or if you want to ask her questions, you can address them to mailbox@grammarphobia.com. We have people asking all sorts of interesting questions. Like we were talking about the 9 yards. Somebody wants to know the origin of the expression dressed to the nines.
You know,
is that related, do you think?
I don't know, but I often ask people this at dinner parties. It's something I've always wanted to know. I probably ought to research it myself, but there are a lot of expressions with the word nine, and I've always wondered why nine. Like there's cloud nine, mm-hmm. dress to the nines, a stitch in time saves nine, to the nth degree. I'm probably missing a couple. But, the whole nine yards. What is it about the number nine that enters into all these expressions? Why not? Why isn't it?
And yet you can't say that a woman is a nine.
No, you have to
say
that's
insulting.
She's a 10. Okay. Or if you say she's an 11, that's even
although
better.
That 10 is dressed to the nines.
Yes. But I've wondered that myself. What is it about nine?
Now, I know you did investigate another word that most of us have wondered about on and off. A listener asked you about the derivation of the word honky.
Yes. And he emailed a few days ago, and he said that the recent death of Sherman Hemsley of the Jeffersons reminded him of all the times that Mr. Jefferson would refer to white people as honkies. And you don't hear the term honky very much these days, but he was wondering about the origin of this black slang term. And in fact, it's likely that honky originated not with African Americans, but as an ethnic slur used by white people against other whites. The Oxford English Dictionary and a number of slang references suggest that honky is a variant or dialectical pronunciation of hunky, H-U-N-K-Y, an older word used by whites to refer to people of Eastern European origins. And this word came up around the late 19th century when there were waves of Eastern European immigration and a lot of poor whites from those countries were coming into this country and competing with more established white groups for industrial jobs. So in places like Ohio, Pennsylvania, the Rust Belt, the Industrial Belt, and the East Coast, you would hear these largely uneducated at that time white immigrants referred to as hunkies or hun. Actually, hunky was probably a diminutive and contemptuous form of Hungarian or Hun, which was often applied loosely to Eastern Europeans, especially Hungarians or Slavs, and especially manual laborers. So that's probably how honky came about, because when black people started using the word hunky later on, in about the, I think it was 20s or 30s, they originally spelled it with a U, hunky, and then the spelling changed to honky. And so that white ethnic slur, used by whites against whites, became used by blacks against whites. So that's how that originated.
Fiona left this question on our show page. I was recently placing an order at a restaurant and told the waiter we were ready to order the whole ball of wax. I've used that phrase for as long as I can remember, but this 20-something fellow was totally taken aback. He'd never heard it. I wasn't able to explain the phrase's origins. So we have a whole
it's
nine yards.
It's a variation on whole nine yards, yeah. I don't know what that I don't know what a whole ball of wax refers to. If it once must have had a literal
meaning. But we've all heard
meaning.
It. Yeah, the funny thing is all of those phrases, we know what they mean the
yes.
first time we hear
yes.
them, even yes. though we have no idea, except that waiter, obviously.
Uh-huh. But some things exist now in figurative senses that have lost their literal meanings over time, like the word loophole. Have you ever wondered what loophole means? Well,
yes.
It was once a slit in a castle wall for archers to shoot out of. And it comes from a Dutch word loop, which means look or look through. And the jeweler's loop, L-O-U-P-E, comes from the same source, something for looking through. And loophole was once something for looking through.
And now it's something.
And now it means some way to get
through.
Out of something. Right, right. So we have a lot of words now that exist in a figurative form, although their literal meanings have long since disappeared.
We have a call from Stephen from Port Washington. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. In the last few years, there's been an increase in the use of the term one-year anniversary, five-year anniversary, instead of just saying the old fifth anniversary, and mm-hmm. I don't understand it. It bothers me that
right.
that extra word is added.
Right, you don't need the word year, really.
Because Annie
it's
is year.
It's become very prevalent mm-hmm. on the news everywhere now.
Right. I think it's because the fact that anno is in there, that it's part of anniversary, it has disappeared into the word. So people think they have to repeat year. And this isn't really incorrect, but Stuart and I, my husband and I, got a question about this once before, and we answered it on our blog, that people say it's a one-year anniversary or two-year anniversary when they really just need to say first or second. But I think because and also people will say it's our six-month anniversary, meaning it's 6 months since they had their first date.
I actually used to work in the insurance industry, and we used to use the term month-versary. Now, I don't know, was that jargon in our industry, or is that a real word?
Well, by real word, that's a tough question. We did discuss the term month-versary, which is used in some industries, just to mean a monthly observation rather than a yearly one.
It would be used like for a premium that was paid on a monthly basis.
Right, right. You might say it's his sixth month-iversary
yeah.
or something.
Oh, my.
But you wouldn't say a six-month-iversary.
Like, no.
Oh, thank you for calling. Joe has a question about a word that we have discussed in the past. This one's going to be easy for you, Pat. Hi, Joe.
Well, here's the story. I take the seven line very frequently, and every language in the world is spoken on that in North Queens. And I listen to everyone speak, and not only can you not figure out what everyone is saying, you can't figure out what the language is sometimes, but everyone uses the word okay.
Uh-huh.
And they understand it perfectly. And
It's an American derivation.
Definitely. And it has become a universal word. It's really it's leaped the bounds of English. It's everywhere. But that has been tracked down, by the way. It used to be a sort of whole nine yards situation. Everybody had a theory about what it means. And I think it's now been pretty definitively tracked down to a phrase used in the early 19th century, humorously, all correct, spelled OLLKORRECT or CT. All correct, okay for short. There was a brief phase sometime during that period when people used humorous respellings of expressions, and all correct was spelled as if it began with an O and a K. So that's how that came about.
Steve from Westchester suggests being in the wrong place at the wrong time should be being in the wrong place at the right time. The wrong time would indicate that you missed it.
I know. I've had that thought myself. It's more like being in the wrong place at a particular time or being in the right place at the wrong time.
Now, Sandra from Manhattan has one of the other suggestions for the whole nine yards that we forgot to mention. Hi, uh-huh. Sandra.
Hi. I don't know where I read this, but recently I read that the whole nine yards refers to the length of line that a parachutist, the guy jumping out of an airplane for whatever reason in World War II, would have had to travel before he made his jump.
You mean he'd fall 27 feet?
Well,
I don't think
they had to clip on a line inside the plane, and the line was 9 yards long.
Oh.
And then they disengaged from that line and jumped out of the plane.
Yeah, that's one I've never heard. I thought I had heard them all, but I've never heard that one.
I always thought that the 9 yards with the parachutes was the amount of material in the parachute.
Yeah, that I've heard.
So.
But it's something about 9 yards. There are so many things that it could be. It's been suggested it was a difference between the average prison, the wall of a prison, and the first row of wire fence beyond which prisoners couldn't go. I mean, there are so many theories. It's
people are wondering why the ammunition belt was 9 yards long.
Yeah, I don't know. I once really applied myself to this, believe it or not. I tried to find out the length of an ammunition belt on, say, a tail gunner in World War II, and I couldn't find anywhere that said how long the ammunition belt was. Now, obviously, if it was 27 feet, that would have been a pretty good piece of evidence. Wouldn't be definitive, but I never found it.
A reminder to ask Pat a question. You can email her directly at mailbox@grammarphobia.com. You can also click on Pat's blog at grammarphobia.com to see a selection of language questions from WNYC listeners and other things that you have been looking into. And I'm assuming that our listeners are all very familiar with your books, Woe Is I, Words Fail Me, You Send Me, Origins of the Specious, Woe Is I, Junior. What else do I want to say? Oh, yeah. You're going to be back on Halloween.
I am. Oh.
Yeah.
That's right, the 31st.
Yeah,
yes.
I'm kind of looking forward
to it. Okay, I'll bring a mask.